The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Welcome to Monday, August 12th. Join the conversation at 770-5633-770-KMED. The email bill at billmyersshow.com. Facebook.com/Bill Myers Show feed is up until the iPad 10 decides to give me more trouble again, if that ends up being the case. If so, it's nothing personal. I'm probably just going to bring my own iPad in and make it work, okay? Sometimes you just have to replace stuff. Anyway, we're going to have some good conversation this morning. Jackson County Sheriff Nate Sickler will join me after 6:30. We're going to talk about the need for, and I guess looking out on the horizon about, how do you end up paying for a jail? Because people would, relatively speaking, support a new jail for Jackson County and be able to expand the ability to keep people who need to stay in jail, the ability to stay in jail, which is a problem right now as we've continued to get a little more dirt baggy between the drug addiction and the raving lunatic homeless and, you know, that sort of situation. And so we'll have a conversation about that. Of course, the real question is, how do you end up paying for something like that? And we'll talk with Nate a little bit later on this hour. We're also going to talk with John O'Connor. I'm looking forward to John. John's an interesting cat, was Deep Throat's lawyer back in the day. And it's been 50 years since we've had the 50 years, I guess I should say, since President Nixon resigned over Watergate. And we're going to talk about the journalism's role in that. And was it as truthful as it was told to us, or was this more of a, in other words, did Nixon resign over a lie, I guess, really? We'll have a little conversation about that. More history was also on the way here. Dr. Dennis Powers, where past meets present. We'll talk with him a little bit later. And always interesting conversation with you, too, at 770-563-3770-KMED. I was listening to Hugh Hewitt this morning. I was wake up to Hugh, and he had a soundbite that I'm going to borrow from his show and share that his producer ended up bringing up, and had to do with Tim Walz, Kamala Harris's running mate. And it's continuing to go down the stolen valor. This is a clip which came from about 3-4 years ago when it was remembering 9/11. And people talking about, their memories of that day. And I'm going to play the whole bite for you. It's about 3-4 minutes. And once again, just as Hugh did, I'm going to do the same thing. Because I'm not a veteran. But is he continuing to make himself sound like, once again, that he served in combat in Iraq? It alludes that way. Not that I want to pre-sell it to you, but I'll play the whole soundbite for you, and you tell me what your thought was, if you have a thought or an opinion on it, okay? Here we go.
You reflect for a couple of hours of what happened. I can't pretend to know what would motivate each of you to do that, but I have a pretty strong feeling. It's like all of us, and myself included, I spent this last week and from time to time thinking about what has happened in those 20 years. And I think it's natural to view your own personal journey of what happened to you, but it's also the broader, we are not an island. We are amongst others. We're amongst our fellow Minnesotans and our fellow Americans. So as you're setting today, I'm guessing, just like I was, and I appreciate Jill saying that, to be present in the moment and listen to what people say can change the way you're going to think about things. And I think of all those emotions I went through. Fear, anger, confusion, hope, pride, a desire to get revenge, guilt, all of the things that we went through. I think for me, on that fateful morning, the sun was shining about like this. I was sitting in room 114 at Mankato West High School right before school started. And on a typical American and Minnesota high school, the noise in the halls, and it was a new school year. Kids were coming in and setting, and the TV was on. And those events started to unfold, and that room got fuller and fuller, and quiet, and tears, and fear, and confusion. Those 15 and 16-year-olds are now in their 30s, and like Mariah, they have children. And for those of you who chose to bring children today, thank you. Thank you for taking it and understanding. As we get further from events, Our memories fade, both individually and collectively, and it becomes harder to tell that story. And then the years that happened after that classroom, I had the privilege of serving in this state's National Guard. And when I left, I had a 2-year-old. When I came home, I had a 3-year-old. But as I listened to Jill and I listened to Mariah, the guilt, I came home and my daughter went on. And when you're 2 and 3, she knew no difference. That's not true for some. They can't do that. And over the preceding years of watching us, and as our nation changed, and as our political systems became more difficult for all of us to understand, I stood one night in the dark of night on the tarmac at Bagram and watched a military ramp ceremony. And if you've seen it, which these folks, many have, unfortunately, you don't leave the same. And it makes you wonder, what are we doing? What are we trying to get to? And then watching, as all of you, of the confusing last few weeks. So for all of my 40,000 fellow veterans, and for those were the times just since 9/11 and all those who served, as you heard folks up here speak, it was this state that volunteered first when the nation was most at peril.
Okay, that was Tim Walz once again on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And you heard the part about him talking about, being on the tarmac of Bagram. Did that imply to your ears that he was a combat veteran at that time, which we know he was not, because he ended up resigning a couple of months from the Air National Guard or from the Minnesota National Guard before his unit ended up deploying to Iraq? Did that statement to your ears imply or attempt to imply that he was a combat veteran of Iraq? This is going back to the stolen valor. It's a serious question, and they're still trying to vet more of this on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Like I said, I got this from the Hugh Hewitt Show, but I thought it was interesting. That kind of caught my ear this morning when I was waking up and listening to it. I said, I'm going to grab that one. And there is talk that perhaps this was later on when he was a member of Congress, and then he went to Bagram Air Base at that time. But he didn't say that at that time, like as a congressman, I did this. To me, it sounded a little bit like he was trying to do that. If you have a thought about that, I'd love to take your call too. 770-5633. Was it the sin or the lie of omission again, or something else, or nothing to be concerned about? 770-5633. This is the Bill Maher Show.
Spectrum delivers with fast and reliable internet. And with Spectrum One, you get even more. Spectrum internet, so you can work, game, and stream with speeds up to a gig. Plus advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and one Spectrum Mobile unlimited line, both free for 12 months. Internet, advanced Wi-Fi, and mobile. Get it all together with Spectrum One. Starting at just $49.99 a month. Visit Spectrum.com for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. Always appreciate you listening, no matter the time. Live 6 to 9 weekdays on 106.3 KMED and 99.3 KBXG. I'm here for you. But life has a way of getting busy. So if you miss a show and you want to catch up, or you just have a different schedule, well, that's what my podcasts are for. The last 3 months or so of my shows available for free download and sharing on KMED.com or BillMeyerShow.com. Podcasts are sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They're helping keep you current. Find out about their services on ClouserDrilling.com.
Oregon E-Deals has saved the Rogue Valley boatloads of cash over the years, and they aren't stopping. Get a Lithia body and paint certificate, normally $500, now only $300. Artisan bakery certificates, normally $25, only $15. American Wrencher Garage, $75 certificates, good for any service, only $40. This and much more available exclusively at OregonEDeals.com.
I'm hooked on OregonEDeals.com. I'm saving big.
The email of the day on the Bill Maher Show, sponsored by Central Point Family Dentistry. See all they have to offer at CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com and call for an appointment. Dr. Steve Nelson and his staff are next to Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant, just off Pine in Central Point.
Drake's Paint and Supply, your only locally owned paint store, is now open in South Medford. The South Medford store offers the same top quality Benjamin Moore paint and stain and all the equipment and supplies the North Medford and Grants Pass stores offer, with the legacy of service and value Drake's is known for. Drake's Paint, your local Benjamin Moore dealer, with three Rogue Valley locations to serve you in North Medford on North Pacific Highway, Grants Pass in the Parkway Village, and now in South Medford between Central and Riverside, just north of where the two combine.
Honestly, provocative talk radio on the Lars Larson Show.
I don't think Kamala Harris really wants to be president. I know she doesn't want to talk to reporters. She hasn't talked to a reporter on the record in 18 days. She doesn't like being asked questions because, you know, when she asks questions, oftentimes she says really foolish things. It ends up on video or on audio, and she sounds like the idiot she is.
Lars, weekdays noon to 3 on KMED.
With so many working and doing business from home, it's good to know there's a community business center to help. A Street Print and Parcel is a one-stop shop for everything from large format printing and scanning to blueprints, architectural plans, and shipping. Their Studio 10 expansion offers passport photos, photo mounting, fine art scanning, art reproductions, signs and banners, negative and slide scanning, canvas prints, and so much more. Located in Ashland on A Street across from Ashland Hardware. Their motto, we create it, print it, pack it, and ship it. A Street Print and Parcel and Studio 10.
This is Randall with Advanced Air, and I'm on KMED.
624, like I just mentioned here, in a few minutes we're going to be talking about the Jackson County Jail. What is the future of that? Sheriff Nate Sickler will be joining me. In fact, he's having a cup of coffee out in the hallway. I'll get him in here after the next news break. Hey, play the soundbite there. I don't know, and I'm going to continue to keep this open off and on for people who are mostly who served in the military. I really wanted to get your opinion because when it comes to the stolen valor situation in Tim Walz, Kamala's running mate, it's really the people who serve that I think who really kind of draw that judgment. But I just know that when I heard Hugh Hewitt this morning play this clip that in which Tim talks about, hey, you know, I'm standing there on the at the Bagram Air Base. And to me, it sounded like someone 20 years after the fact who was trying to imply as if he had actually been there in combat. Now, there is a pretty good chance that he may have been there as a congressman when he was a congressman from Minnesota. But he didn't talk it or he didn't say it that way, sort of the sin of omission. Maybe it's just one of those things you just do as you're talking to your constituents and you're spitballing. It's not probably a written speech, that sort of thing. But is this another red flag or not? Or are we a different kind of country now in which stolen valor or lying on the campaign trail or... I mean, maybe this is what we're going to be looking at here. And, you know, in order to become president, Kamala and Tim will just end up lying for the next 90 days and the media will end up covering them up. I don't know. But that's certainly a question worthy of discussion. 770-563-3770-KMED. Oh, speaking of Kamala, she promises to fix the border crisis. A town hall reporting Vice President Kamala Harris did nothing but allowed over 15 million illegal immigrants to storm into the United States while she was border czar, right? Now she's campaigning on the promise to fix the crisis which she created. She calls it a pathway to citizenship, in other words, allowing everybody to stay. All right, there we go. We have that story, too. 770-5633. I wanted to share an email here of local import the other day, and this came from a fellow who calls himself Joe Blow. Joe Blow wrote me the other day. By the way, my email is bill@billmeyershow.com. Joe Blow wrote me, yesterday, when I listened to your show with Commissioner West, I found an inaccuracy with his claims about the pipe fork. Remember the pipe fork situation we were talking about last week where the Josephine County Commission chose not to sell it to the nonprofit group because they couldn't get, or up to this point, have not been able to receive any promises that this land would not be locked up by the BLM and locked away from the public. They always wanted it available to the public. And the Greens earlier were saying, oh, yes, we want to protect this and make sure it's open. And then later on, the Greens start saying, oh, well, we don't care if it gets locked up or locked. We just, you know, they just don't want Josephine County to do anything with it, apparently, I guess, is what's going on. So, but anyway, pipe fork, right? And so Joe says, when I listened to your show with Commissioner West, I found it inaccurate with his claims around Pipe Fork. He claims to not own property near Pipe Fork, but a little research shows that he owns the neighboring property. Cascade Land Holdings, which is directly to the north, according to the Oregon Secretary of State, John West is the registered agent. Will you correct this statement to your listeners? Well, as a matter of fact, Joe Blow, I will correct it to the listeners. In fact, I will just make sure that people understand that, no, John West doesn't own any property. And here's what I ended up doing. That information appears to be very out of date now. John West has not been involved in that company for 4 or 5 years. I talked to John West about that on Friday, and it took me a little bit of time, but I ended up getting the number of the person who actually owns that land by Pipework now, and his name is Bill Mielicki. So I ended up calling up Bill Mielicki on Friday. Maybe it was Thursday that I called him up. I might not have talked about it on Friday when I was just out of time or whatever reason. But he and John used to be in a partnership, and they own a couple of parcels, including the one that Joe Blow referenced, which was by Pipe Fork, all right? And when they dissolved that partnership, Mielicki took the adjacent Pipe Fork parcel. So Bill Mielicki has that property now, and John West took a piece of property somewhere else, all right? Now, remember, that was direct, not from West. That was not from West. That was from Mielicki, who was John West's business partner, former business partner. And John West says he believes the old corporation is now considered inactive, but West and Mielicki are no longer in business together. And I just wanted you to know that if you hear anybody spreading any rumors about John West not wanting to sell that Pipe Fork property because, well, he's got property right next to it, that's not true. Okay? So I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows that. Because such rumors have an amazing tendency to just get spread around here. 29 minutes after 6, join in at 770-5633. Let me go to some calls here before news. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Jeff?
Yeah, hi, who's this?
This is Jeff.
Oh, hi, Jeff. How are you this morning? Welcome.
I'm doing well, sir. How about yourself?
Doing great. What's on your mind today?
Oh, the Wall Stolen Valor thing. From that little clip, I wouldn't assume that that was stolen valor, because if he was there, even in the military, or, you know, he served in the military. Now,
yes.
Could he be alluding to the fact that he did stuff? Politicians and lawyers lie and omit and don't really complete sentences all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But stolen valor to me is somebody that's never been in the military and brags about their service and everything that they've done.
So you think the bar is higher than what the talk show hosts have been talking about then as to stolen valor? That is that fair, Jeff?
Well, yeah. Well, and it also depends, because you know there probably are some clips where he maybe says something that makes it sound like he did go to combat, but that one doesn't sound like it to me, because at Bagram he could be, you know, just working motor pole, or you could be doing all kinds of stuff there. It's not just people going out and, you know, getting shot at it. I mean, you're...
Yeah, well, he never served in Iraq, but when he talked about being on Bagram, he very well could have been part of a congressional delegation, because he was also a Congress critter there for a number of years. So,
yep.
So you're thinking that's just kind of one of those innocent things, just let it go, just...
That one, mm-hmm. It doesn't sound egregious to me.
Okay, all right. And that's why I wanted to toss it out there, because... I didn't have a particularly strong opinion, and I could see there was wiggle room in that one, I thought. But
yeah, and you know, like you said, though, he could be alluding to stuff, because people believe things that they're listening to, and they make up stuff in their own heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people could be inflating him more than he is, and then other people are making him demonizing more than he is. And it, because he's so vague on it, you don't really even know what he's trying to do, other than let people's imaginations run wild.
Hey, I appreciate your opinion. That's why I threw it out there. It's like, I know they're getting all hot and bothered about it in some things, but I just don't know if the stolen valor stuff matters in today's America. Not that it shouldn't, but I don't know if it's a different country now, isn't it? In some ways.
Well, I think a lot of the stolen valor stuff depends on what side you are. I think if you're a Democrat and you hear what he has to say, he could say that he was in combat and they wouldn't even care.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're a conservative and you even allude to the fact that you're there, they get offended. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it depends. Now, if that was a Republican running for office, they'd set him on fire, right? That kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, everybody will point out, oh, but look at Trump. He didn't even go. He five times, or supposedly. I haven't even looked it up.
Yeah.
Never even, you know, did deferments, and which I don't really care. You know, I'm a Marine vet, and we haven't been in a war since probably World War II that we should have even been in.
That's an interesting way of putting it, Jeff. Thanks for the call, all right? 770-5633. Let me grab another one here before news. Good morning. Hi, who is this? Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Bill. Bob Shannon in Medford.
Hi, Bob. How are you? What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm great. My dad was two tours of duty in Vietnam, okay? When I was a teenager, I took my jean jacket, and I started embellishing it, as many teenagers do. And I put, you know, a sergeant stripe or something on my jacket. My dad looked at me, and my dad was a man of few words. He says, son, if you don't earn it, you don't wear it.
Mm. So your dad took that seriously as a heart attack, right?
Seriously as a heart attack. So stolen valor, you know, isn't just somebody who didn't go, never was. Stolen valor is, say, somebody who is in the rear with the gear. And then they say, I was in this mission, that mission. Mm-hmm. Or if I told you what I did, I'd have to kill you kind of stuff to cover up something that they didn't do to embellish.
And yet, to be fair, though, being in the rear with the gear isn't always a safe place to be either, though.
No. If you served, you served.
Yeah.
It's just if you said you did more than you did, or you wear a medal that you didn't earn.
Yeah, you make yourself out to be Audie Murphy, right? You know, it's...
Right.
Okay.
Right. Which, Audie Murphy, I got a story about Audie Murphy sometime off air I can tell you about.
Well, I would appreciate hearing that.
That's not germane to our conversation. So, I don't know if you remember back in the 80s when they had the big, protest over there by the recruiting stations. By Sears, you know, in the newspaper.
I remember those, yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't living here then. I was in Seattle then and in Barstow, but I remember the kind of protests going on. Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah, we had one of those there, you know, and I was working across the street from it one day, so happened to be on my lunch break, and I walked across the street there, and there was a guy with an American flag tattered, torn, written up. He was very angry because his dad was in the Army. And I was taking offense to the tattered, battered flag. And I told him, you know, my dad was there too. But if you got a problem with our military and our servicemen, you don't bash them. You take it up with the shirts and the skirts that put them there in the first place. So, you know, I think the vice presidential candidate, you know, difficult decision. How is he best going to make a difference? And he was heading toward Congress. He was heading toward a political career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can't defend what I don't know, but just from, you know, the media, conservative, liberal, whatever, kind of taking it all in and trying to digest it down, maybe he was looking at trying to serve in a capacity that he could make a difference.
Yeah, maybe that was it. And maybe, you know, and maybe the cigar is just a cigar in this case, too.
And I think the spin doctors maybe pushed it a little further than it should have.
Yeah, it could be. All right. Bob, I always appreciate your commentary. Thank you for that. Okay?
Thank you, Bill.
6:35. We'll catch up on the rest of the news here in just a moment. Talk of the jail here. What is next? All coming up on KMED and KBXG. Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. A Central Point man has been arrested in Portland in connection with a multi-state car theft ring. Authorities say the group used an electronic device to operate and steal muscle cars, including Challengers and Camaros. The cars were then sold on social media. The ringleader was identified as 21-year-old Eric Adams. He was arrested in Central Point. He's looking at 16 charges. Fire managers say they made good progress on several incidents in Central Oregon. West of Madras, the Elk Lane fire is 65% contained. East of Prineville, the Crazy Creek fire is 60% contained. The Jackson County Animal Shelter is over capacity, and they've stopped accepting animals because of an influx of law enforcement intakes and strays. The shelter is trying to farm the animals out to other shelters and rescues. The county is waiving adoption fees for all dogs that have been at the shelter for more than 100 days and reducing fees on other adoptable dogs. I'm Bill London, KMED News.
Have your taxes gotten off track? Just call Zach, CPA at First Response Resolution. Visit firstresponseirs.com today to see what Zach can do for you. First Response Resolution in Eagle Point is your first response to the IRS, defending your rights as a taxpayer.
Your smile is the key to your health and confidence. Do you know that one out of two adults do not regularly see their dentist due to fear or anxiety? Hi, I'm Dr. Robert Johnson from Dental Excellence, and I'm here to change that. How? Sedation dentistry. This procedure is safe, comfortable, fast-acting, and effective, and I've been doing it for years. Here at Dental Excellence, we can eliminate your fears and anxieties with little to no memory of the procedure, and often complete years of dental treatment in just one visit. There are several levels of sedation to choose from, and my caring team will help pick the right one for you. We understand if you have put off the health of your smile, and we want to help you regain your confidence. Come and see. Dental Excellence is Southern Oregon's center for sedation, implant, and family dentistry. Call us today at 541-779-6170. Taking care of your smile is not something you have to delay any longer.
Dental Excellence, changing lives, one smile at a time.
We've heard it all.
I guess that's why they call it a blind spot.
Let me tell you something. Turkeys have no respect for right of way.
Biggest tumbleweed ever. Bam!
Black ice in July. No, really.
But the reason you need auto body repair doesn't matter to us. What matters is we make your car like new and the process easy for you.
Lithia Body and Paint gets you back on the road like it never happened. Service, speed, accuracy. That's Lithia Body and Paint.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason. The United States sending more military assets to the Middle East. The additional deployments come at the direction of Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. The mission is said to be the defense of Israel in the event of an Iranian attack. Israel says a school it attacked in Gaza was being used as a Hamas command center, and more than a dozen terrorists were killed. The Palestinians claim at least 80 people were killed in the attack. Echoing a pledge first made by former President Trump a couple of months ago, Kamala Harris endorsing elimination of federal taxes on tips for service workers at businesses like bars, restaurants, and hotels. Mr. Trump accusing Harris of stealing his ideas. And they've passed the torch to Los Angeles. A star-studded show in France's National Stadium closing out the 2024 Olympics. More details at SRNnews.com.
It's the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
A pleasure to have Jackson County Sheriff Nate Sickler in studio. Nate, great to see you. It's been a while, but you're always welcome, as you know. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay. So relatively, you know, something, this is a national story I was reading the other day, and I wanted to find out if there's any truth to that. And the talk is, the rumor has it, that violent crime is actually going down around the country. It, for some reason, they're talking about, the post-COVID crime wave, yeah, and that they're saying that that's going away now. And do you see that as a sheriff here in Southern
Oregon?
Well,
I think, I think with violent crime, I think most statistics are going to be pretty similar across the yeah, country, meaning, yeah, a murder is a murder, a robbery is a robbery, so on and so forth. And we have seen fewer murders over the last few years, with 2021 being a pretty significant year, and it's gone down slightly since. And so with regards to those types of crimes, it has gotten better, mm-hmm, in Jackson County as well. But we also have a pretty significant number of Measure 11 crimes, so those are also pretty significant criminal acts, right? Those are the most significant we have in Oregon, and they do include murder and rape and robbery and serious assault and things like that. So we have had a pretty steady amount of those over the last few years with some fluctuation, it goes up 20, 30, incidents, yeah, and then down 20 or 30. So we'll see where we're at this year. I think this year we're on par with last year with regards to Measure 11. And that means, when I say that, that's how many people have come to our jail with a Measure 11 charge. Now, that doesn't mean that's the end result of the charge, right? It could be, changed by a prosecuting decision. The facts come out later might warrant a different charge, or in the best interest of justice, maybe that's not the appropriate charge.
Yeah, the reason I was asking, though, is that I always get suspicious when I see everybody on – when everybody starts telling different stories in election years. So I always get – you know how, how that goes, because people always like to play games, I think, with statistics.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I would, and what I have noticed, especially in a lot of the urban areas such as Portland – now, I know you don't control Portland, but you're aware of what goes on.
Sure.
In which people who are never really arrested – and or, you know, the crime is never prosecuted, or people get to the point where they stop calling in crimes. Does it mean that the crime has gone down, or just the fact that people have given up on some of the criminal justice system?
Yeah, I think there's some of that. I think there's some of that. In fact, we've been talking in our office about putting out a community survey, you know, through our various means, you know, whatever, Facebook and email and all the things, and to try to get some community, I guess, input or
feedback of some sort.
Of have you been a victim of crime, and have you reported it? And if you did not, why? You know, what is the is it? Do you feel it's too minor to bother the police? Because we don't ever want to feel that way, right? Or we don't want people to feel that way, that it's cumbersome or bothersome that they call us and tell us that somebody stole their propane tank off their deck or their, you know, something minor, right?
Like, exactly. So,
you know, I think for me as a sheriff, you know, we look at statistics because we kind of have to kind of keep a gauge. But you also look with your own eyes to see what's going on, too. Right. Does it look better or does it look worse? You know, just because it's not being reported doesn't mean it's not occurring. And, you know, I think we saw a lot of that with Measure 110. Drug arrests went way down.
Oh, yeah. You would think
we didn't have a drug arrest, right? For minor offenses, we had still larger scale drug arrests. But, you know, drug arrests went way down, but it certainly didn't feel better.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean?
And it didn't look better either.
And
that's kind of what I was getting at, because I had a nephew who used to work at a retail store, like a golf store, I think it was, in Medford. I don't think the stores exist any longer. But they had, you know, a drug addicted homeless that would just run in there and just grab golf clubs that were insanely expensive. Then they'd steal them, run out the door, and then they'd call police, and then police would show up, and then, of course, nothing would really happen. And then they got to the point where I think they stopped calling because and then, okay, then we're going to be like doing like we were doing in Oakland, where we're going to take the bars of soap and put them under lock and key, you know, behind the cabinet.
You know, it is there's a lot of I think a lot of that across our country, and you know, in certain areas, probably more prevalent than others. But I do think people, you know, is there a chance that the incident is going to be solved, you know, or the crime is going to be solved, and the individual will be brought to justice in their mind? Is there a high likelihood of that? You know, I think law enforcement, I can speak for here, try really hard to solve those things. But some are, you know, you really do have to look at. You know, resource management. You know, if you have 20 of those pending, and you can't solve them all. You know, at least with the resources that you have, and so you have to really look and say which crime is going to be prioritized.
Well, it's like anything else; it's probably going to be a person crime over a property crime. Yeah. That's just the way it is. It's you know, naturally the order of things, which will kind of take us to the next conversation here, which is why I brought you here in the first place. Is given that the Jackson County Jail. I think everybody realizes that for 44 years now, the Jackson County Jail has been not quite up to the task. It's been inadequate. I took a tour of it. You had me take a tour of it a number of years ago, and I never hope to have to visit it as a prisoner, okay? Just wanted to wanted to let you know. But that being said, it is an issue where it was inadequate from the start, just a poor design. And requiring more people to supervise the same amount of prisoners as you can with newer than what you can get with a modern jail. Isn't that really what we're talking about?
And, you know, I don't want to make it sound like the people who came up with that plan, you know, knew these things. You know, hindsight's always 20/20.
Of course it is.
So back then, you know, that was a design, you know, that was very, you know, I think prevalent and, you know, best practice at that time, right?
But we were also about half the size of a county, too. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, it was designed with expansion in mind back then. And they tried to look ahead as to, you know, what would be the best way to expand that footprint downtown Medford and, you know, going up, you know, which doesn't require more, you know, space around. and when you go straight up. But then, of course, things changed, and you know that became not possible due to building codes and whatnot. And so, we did end up going down. Renovating the basement. Sheriff Mike Winters did that when he was in office. I want to say in 2014 or 15-ish, and that added, 60 more beds plus some of the other renovations of double bunking areas and whatnot. So the jail is at its capacity now, because when it was designed in, the late 70s, I think the maximum capacity they envisioned at the time was around 270 or 280 people or something like that. I don't remember the exact number, but when I talk about that, that's your laundry space, your kitchen space, and some of the other amenities you need to support the population. So we've reached that in essence. So it's just there's not much more we can do with that facility.
And I know you can't do the things, and I've talked about this ad infinitum, with listeners, is saying no, you're not going to be able to do the pink underwear and Sheriff Joe Arpaio, because this is correct. Oregon, different rules. In fact, even Joe Arpaio was sued out of existence.
Yeah,
over what
he was, and I don't know the exact number. I've heard it was over $100 million in lawsuits that the county had to deal with over those years. And as that sounds as maybe a cheap alternative to building a bigger jail, it's really just not practical when you talk about your big cost of staffing. So regardless of what you build, you have to have staff to supervise the individuals in custody. And if you have non-secure facility like tents and other things, you just need more staff, and that really drives up your operational costs.
So it's not even as much of the cost of the jail, but the cost of the staff that you end up having to run it overall?
Yeah, I mean, when you look over time, staffing and operational costs, there's food, there's medical services, there's all kinds of things that you have to include in a plan to operate a jail. And over time, those outweigh the construction costs significantly.
All right. Now, the jail and the sheriff's department has been run out of the basic levy, $2 and a penny, forever and ever. Amen.
Well, that's just the county property tax.
Yeah, the county property tax, the basic property tax. Why can't a new jail be constructed out of that $2 and a penny, given that, it was the old jail was constructed out of the $2 and a penny? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, the county is in a pretty good spot financially as far as compared to maybe some of our other, counties in the state.
Well aware.
And so I think the county is ran well when it comes to financial things, but there's just not enough money. And the 201 per thousand, which is what we're funded out of. And then we also have, there's fees and there's some grant funding that we get, but there's just not enough money. I mean, I know the plan that, we have been looking at I think $1.57-ish or whatever for the new jail,
That was what was proposed. That was what was put out in that study.
In the survey, yeah.
And
nothing's been proposed to the voters yet. That was the survey that was put out to see where people would be, if they would be in favor of that or not in favor of that. But that would be the cost that would have to go out to the taxpayers to run a jail similarly sized to the last plan we had. So back in 2020.
So, $1.50 per thousand. Yeah, which is not small.
Even that money, after 20 years, potentially could not fund the jail. There could be a shortfall after 20 years. But I think that's pretty normal in most government. And he's like, the cost of inflation at its current rate and the cost that the county can increase or that the value, property values increase at 3%, the assessed value, that's not going to really cover costs either, right? Because inflation is 5-7% right now for certain things, and the taxes don't go up at the same rate that inflation goes up. So, you have to make decisions on how you manage that. And the county's done a pretty good job.
So you have limitations on how far, now even when you do have the $2 and a penny, or if you were to take $1.57, the assessed value of the property that would pay that only goes up 3% a year. Prices are going up more than 3% a year.
Correct,
right now.
Yeah.
So no matter what, you're kind of falling behind.
Yeah. So, and the county's done a good job, I think, overall of making things work. Despite those shortfalls. So, I don't know that that's a huge reason to not support it, is that it would run out of money in 20 years. You know, hopefully we'd be able to fix a lot of the crime problems in 20 years too, right?
Yeah, okay. Here's an interesting philosophical question. First off, before I get to that, how much jail would have been bought at $1.57 had they moved forward? It hasn't gone forward at this point in time.
Yeah, it was. I believe that was. It's right about 750 beds.
750. So it's more than what? Almost tripling or a little, not quite.
It'd be. It's a little over doubling. So right now we have 346 beds total. We run about 300 up to 300. And that's just because of classification and, you know, there's things which means, you know, there's certain individuals that can't be housed together, you know, or people that need to be housed alone because of they may have a mental health issue. So you have a double bunk and then you have one person in that particular holding cell or whatnot. And so, you know, best practice is about 15 to 20% under your maximum capacity. So you have room to
It up to the limit all the time.
Correct. And it, And so... you know, that would give us a pretty effective operating capacity of about double. So,
okay. So we know that that's what it would cost if we were to move forward. I haven't done it yet. And I would imagine here's the challenge that that property owners feel pretty hard pressed.
Yeah. That's going to be the biggest impediment to any project like this is going to be, you know, how do we fund it? And then where do you go? And do you ask the taxpayers if they're willing to part with that amount of funding?
Or do they have to, or will they even consider going the direction that the cities have gone? And I've not been a fan of this because this whole idea in which you just have a head count or a head tax or you know, every household has to pay up like the parks and utilities fees that you have each month that are levied by city councils.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we haven't really talked about that other than I know the Board of Commissioners has not a fan of that, nor am I.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, for being a county sheriff and, you know, elected officials is that, you know, if it's something that the people are willing to do, then if they would like to vote on it and pass it, then that's one thing. But just assessing, it's another.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons that it's become very popular is that, you know, people who are property owners are not the only ones that are kind of on the hook legally, you know, to pay for something. It ends up being, and then you get, well, I'm on a fixed income. Hey, join the club. We're all fixed income.
Yeah.
You know, to a certain extent.
I get it, you know, and that's the question, you know, that we have to answer. And hopefully over the next, you know, few months, you know, we're planning on doing some community meetings and some town halls and just kind of figure out where people might be at and try to reach out to them and just find out what they're thinking and what ideas they may have and what other concerns they might have with regards to the criminal justice system and see if, you know, at some point we put this before the voters. You know, I kind of feel as a sheriff that we have a responsibility to do that at some point and let the people decide, you know, just
last time it was up though, it went down in flames.
It did. And, you know, it's okay. I think, you know, at the time there were some other factors there that I don't think it would have passed, but you know, we did not pursue it once COVID hit, kind of thing. You know, we didn't market, we didn't really campaign for it. You know, it was kind of let it ride as it was because it didn't feel like it was appropriate to go out, especially at the unknown, right at the onset of COVID and all the things that were going on. And you know, the survey was, I thought, you know, gave me some optimism that we were a lot closer with this survey than we were the last.
Had we not passed Measure 110, would we be in better shape right now, you think, as a law enforcement official? If we had not gone down that
path? Yeah, I think 110 was terrible for the state of Oregon and for Jackson County. You know, but that, again, voter passed, you know, that measure. And, you know, you kind of got to live with it. And I'm glad there's some, you know, reform that's been done. And, you know, we're looking at in September to be able to, you know, intervene differently with the criminal justice system, make arrests again for small, you know, amounts of drugs possession.
But once again, you can't keep anybody there.
Yeah, really. I mean, you know, we're going to be challenged with regard to that. But, you know, we're going to try to figure some way to use the space that we do have effectively, and we're going to try to make the most out of it, just like we do with the jail currently. You know, so we're not just going to throw our hands up and give up. There's a lot of challenges in our criminal justice system right now. You know, we have and a shortage of public defenders. And so we have a really significant amount of unrepresented defendants in our community. In fact, I think we are leading the state. We have one of the most significant problems.
And the judges made it, judges declared that you're going to find a way to fix that. And, you know, that's another interesting question. Even if you did have the jail, you know, at mm-hmm. some point then, would the district attorney or would the prosecutorial folks around here, would they adequately, this is a question that was asked by a couple of people writing me over the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, even if you had your jail, would today's justice system in Southern Oregon put them in it?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I believe, because I've been working in around Southern Oregon most of my whole career, you know, short stint over in Klamath Falls. And the DA's office has always been, you know, pretty aggressive compared to our other counties. And I know it seems like there's, you know, sometimes that doesn't happen. And I think, you know, unfortunately, sometimes the DA might be unfairly characterized as not prosecuting things. But, you know, when you look at statistics and how many crimes have been prosecuted through that office, it's pretty significant compared to even other counties. In fact, there was a 3-year period where the only county that filed more felonies in was Multnomah out of all the counties. Yeah. Hmm. So through the circuit court, that means the DA charged somebody. So a pretty aggressive prosecutor's office, really. And, you know, and I know people have had different experiences, so I'm not making light of those. It's just, it's a busy system here. And the jail, I think, has certainly contributed to some of the upside downness of our system. For instance, you know, I remember you were at that talk I gave, and I used you as an example. I used you as my as Bill had done these things.
I was a horrible criminal in the example.
Yeah. So, but you know how that works. You know, somebody comes into jail with a minor charge, they get kicked out because we don't have a room to hold them, and they go out and get more charges, and this just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating until this individual maybe has 20, 25 charges or whatever. You know, it might be a little extreme, but. Just for conversation,
yeah.
It's happened. And so now you have an attorney who, the district attorney's office, who has all these cases, and then you have to find a, you know, defense attorney to represent them. And the way that system is set up with the public defenders is that they work off of credits, right? So, you know, if you represent somebody for a real minor crime, maybe it's a quarter credit. If it's a murder, maybe it's 60 credits, right?
Yeah.
And so once they run out of credits, then it becomes problematic because, you know, they don't take on more clients. And so not having somebody or the capacity in the jail, you know, actually taxes the system in different ways. So, you know, all these things kind of lead back to like this shortage of jail. And over time, it's kind of compounding, like compounding interest, right? You know, like this continual operating our county at red line because we don't have jail capacity.
It's like the floodwater is always continually. Floodwater is never pumped away.
Really. Yeah. And so, you know, For us who have worked in the system for a really long time and have been able to watch this and, you know, study it and look at it, it's like, look, we know it's expensive. We know this is going to be a burden. But at some point that, you know, we got to make a change at some point somehow, right? And, you know what that looks like, you know, does a county find a way at some point to build a new jail? And then how would we operate it? You know, those things will obviously have to be looked at into the future. But at some point, we will need a new jail, regardless, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. The building won't last forever.
Yeah, I know. Now, I'm going to hit you up with a question. I've asked you this before, and so just bear with me, though. A lot of the people that are in the jail right now are people who are awaiting trial. And they're sex offenders, the perverts, the mm-hmm. various people who you keep them locked up down there. Is there any way to contract with Joe County that has capacity but doesn't have personnel to be able to take people on a waiting trial over a long period?
Well, we've that was done, and it wasn't for a pretrial. It was done with people who had been adjudicated through the system, and they would serve sentences in other counties. And that was done. Mike Winters did that way back, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, now I don't think we ever used the capacity of beds that we had access to, because our issue in Jackson County isn't necessarily post trial or adjudication, it's pre-trial.
Meaning
pre-trial.
That's what I was getting at.
And so, you know, defendants have the right to go to court in the county that they're accused. So you can do video conferencing, and we do that in our jail currently. And a new jail, that would be a big part of it. You know,
You're not going to take them out of White City into downtown every time you have a hearing.
Yeah, and so you have those hearings. Well, we're going to actually, in the jail plan, we would put a courthouse in our jail.
Oh,
yeah, so you could bring the, you know, it'd be a much easier, much more efficient way of doing certain proceedings. You can't do all of them there, but you could do some arraignments and whatnot. But, you know, so, you know, so there's, that's one challenge. The other is the staffing. So if I'm going to be transporting, you know, all these individuals to Joe County or Klamath County or a combination thereof, mm-hmm. you know, you need more transport deputies, and then you got to pay for the bed rentals. And so for us, it's like, okay, so how do we pay for that? If I need, say, 100 beds and, you know, the going rate is 150 a day or whatever it is, mm-hmm. maybe a little less, 125 a day per bed used, you know, let's just say I know at one point we added that up for conversation's sake, and it was about $3 million a year, you know, of cost. So if I don't have $3 million in my budget, where do I go? So do I go to the taxpayer and say I need $3 million a year, or do we take it out of the rainy day fund? And if we do that, well, you know, if you spend more than you make, at some point you'll run out of rainy day funds, and then we'll have nothing. We won't have enough money to even put towards any kind of capital project, and we'll be operating at a deficit each year. And so, you know, is that the best way to do business? Could you do it short term? Mm-hmm. Maybe. But is that going to be a long-term solution for our county? You know, our jail plan is at least a 20-year solution. I would say it's probably – the building is going to be a 50-year building. But, you know, so yeah, you want to spend the money.
And you pray that the inflation, you know, calms down.
Yeah, and those estimates obviously are – you know, those ones that we did for this plan are, you know, considering inflation rates today, you know, so – who knows? They could go higher. They could be less. We don't know.
All right. Very good. What is next now? Just, you know, going around talking to people about this? Or
yeah,
where are you going?
We want to do some community outreach, you know, with I think going to the community and hearing from the people directly, whether they say, we're not interested in this project at all, which I think is good feedback, or maybe they want us to pursue it, which I think is good feedback. And maybe there's other things that we could address in those particular communities as well, because it's not just about jail. You know, we want to reach out and say, you know, do you have particular issues in your areas that, you know, we can try to help with? And so it's just really connecting with, you know, the constituents and seeing what we can do better as a sheriff's office and, you know, how we might better serve them. And, you know, we'll definitely talk about jail stuff and get public sentiment. Cause I think with the survey for me, you know, if we took a vote tomorrow, I think everyone's convinced that it wouldn't pass tomorrow. But this is, you know, a survey is like a cold call, you know, and it's just going out and it was fairly close. In my opinion, it's too close to not pursue anything else. Like I just want to move forward, get a little more information and then see where we're at.